Hare Krishna. Thank you, devotees, for coming. How nice to have your association for our questions and answers session. The questions sheet is already moving around. It will come your way in due course. Please write down any questions you may have, and shortly we will begin trying to answer them. Initially, though, let us say a few words on an interesting subject about appreciation, trying to appreciate everyone. Yes. You know, of course, you might think some people just cannot be appreciated in a positive sense, in a nice sense. You know, how can you appreciate Adolf Hitler? What would you say? Stalin or the National Party? How can you appreciate these people? But actually, it's interesting, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a story of the Avanti Brahman. It is late in the Bhagavatam, if I remember correctly, I think it may be the 11th canto, towards the end. And the Avanti Brahman, he's a devotee, and he is traveling around, walking around the country and just walking around on an extended pilgrimage, and he is observing people and things and just whatever, observing his surroundings as he moves around. And he learns things, important things, from all sorts of, not just people, but from animals, for example, from trees, plants. He learns things even from inanimate objects, rocks, mountains. He learns things. So, and they're good things. They're good things. Like, he learns tolerance. He learns tolerance from the mountain. Because the mountain is standing there, and sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold, and sometimes it's raining, and so on and so forth. And the mountain just stands there, and the mountain does not complain. The mountain does not complain or try to do something about it, move away. The mountain just stands there and tolerates. So he learns tolerance from the mountain. And tolerance, that's a very important lesson to learn. Because this is the material world. And things do not always go our way. In fact, of course, when one is young, one may think, expect, particularly if you watch television and the movies, which we don't recommend, but anyway, if you do, you see, what do you see? In virtually all the movies, at least going back, the good guys, the good people always win. Don't they? I don't know about so much recently, it may not be so much like that now, but I know definitely in the past, the good guys always would win. Every single time. And the bad guys would always lose. It's just 100%, that was all. Pretty much, at least. So, in the minds of impressionable people, and maybe not just all young people, but in the minds of people who are kind of innocent and don't really, not observant enough and don't think carefully enough about life. So they watch these things and they develop this very optimistic view about life. Like, crime never pays. Sorry, folks. Crime pays very well. Of course, sometimes they get caught. But sometimes whatever you do, you get caught. But, oh yeah, crime, if we're really getting into crime, take over a whole country, become the prime minister or the president, oh, then you can do very well. In Russia, in every city, there's a mayor, and the mayor, it's not like a ceremonial post, the mayor is like the president of the city. And in every city, the mayor, if you ask, who's the richest person in the city? It's always the mayor. It's always the mayor. Because crime pays. And he's in a very good position. So, yeah. Things are like this in the material world. But actually the fact is, in material life there are many problems, there are many difficulties, there are many difficult people, actually. And sometimes you just encounter difficult people and you wish they'd go away, but somehow, sometimes they don't go away. Sometimes you have to work with one. Would you believe sometimes you may marry one? Hare Krishna. So to learn tolerance, this is very valuable. It's extremely valuable because in this world there are many things you have to tolerate. So he learns, I forget all the different examples, but he learns something from some different types of birds and different types of people also. So in other words, if you have the eyes, if we have the eyes to see, then we will see that there is something worthy of being appreciated in everybody. Yes. And there's a very interesting incident, you could say, in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And particularly it's the significance of it is expressed in one particular verse. Third canto, chapter 2, verse 23. Look it up when you go home if you have the Bhagavatam, if you can remember. So that verse goes, Aho Bhakiyam Stanakala Kutam Jihamsaya Payayad Apyasavi. These are just the first two lines. So in that verse, it is Uddhava speaking. Uddhava is a very great devotee, extremely great devotee of Krishna. And actually he's very close associate. He is Krishna's advisor, you could say. So anyway, the verse is spoken by Uddhava, and Uddhava is saying, Aho, alas, oh, he's lamenting. Aho Bhakiyam Stanakala Kutam. He is lamenting immediately, very shortly after Lord Krishna's departure from this world. Krishna has gone back to Goloka Vrindavan. and they were so close, but now the relationship is broken, at least for the time being. So whatever is lamenting having lost such a dear person, Krishna, who was so close to him, and who he had such an intimate, affectionate relationship. But in that verse, he is, well, what he's saying is, alas, where will I find someone who can be merciful to me like Krishna was merciful to me? Now Krishna's gone. Where will I find some replacement substitute like that for Krishna? Because Krishna, he was so kind, so helpful, selflessly helpful. So he says, Aho Bhakti Yam. Krishna was so kind. He gave the position of nurse to Putana, who was, the term he uses, well, she of course was a demon. I imagine most or even all of you have heard of Putana, famous demon killed by Krishna, first demon killed by Krishna. So Uddhava is saying, alas, where will I find someone who can be merciful to me like Krishna was now that he's gone? Krishna was so merciful that he gave the position of nurse to Putana, even though she was, the Sanskrit term he uses is asadvi, asadvi. If you are familiar a little bit with Sanskrit and the terminologies we use quite regularly, then you would have heard the term sadhu. Sadhu means a saintly person. Or strictly speaking, it's in the masculine gender. It means a saintly man. And the feminine form is sadhvi. Sadhvi means a saintly lady. So he says, she was asadhvi. Asadhvi means not a saintly lady. Now that, in other words, he's being very nice. He's been expressing himself in a very cultured way. She was not a saintly lady. Actually, if he was going to be explicit and to the point, he would say she was a rotten, horrible, demoniac. Ah. Just, you know, someone to make you sick. In fact, she was a professional killer of children. That's how she earned her living. She would go and kill children for people who wanted those children killed. Yeah. So, but notice, Uddhava says, he doesn't say she was asura or rakshasa or these very strong terms. But he just says, asadvi. She was not saintly. Yeah. And of course everyone has heard of Putana, so they know, oh yes, she was asadvi in a big way. So, Krishna, Srila Prabhupada gives very interesting purport there. As I said, you should read it. 3.2.23, if you can remember that. Srila Prabhupada gives very interesting purport about the character of Krishna. Krishna has such a character. He is such a person. He has such personal qualities that even though Putana was just the most shocking, ghastly demon, just a horrific person, but still Krishna he killed her. He sort of had to kill her, really. It was the only way. Only thing to do with her. She could not be corrected. But Krishna, when he killed her, he gave her the position of nurse in Goloka Vrindavan, in the kingdom of God. And of course, some terrible person like that, she would not only kill the children, she would suck their blood. So, really, extreme. And Krishna killed her. Normally a person who is very vicious and very nasty and hateful, aggressive type of person like that, normally when they die, they go to hell. And there in hell, they suffer terribly for all those horrible things they did. But not in the case of Putana. Krishna killed her, but then Krishna gave her a position in the kingdom of God as one of his eternal associates, as one of his nurses. It is a motherly type of relationship, maternal type of mood to be a nurse. So Uddhava is saying, this is really amazing. How can I find someone to take Krishna's place? And Prabhupada saying in the purport there that this is the character. Well, he initially expresses it, but this is the character of a good person. That a good person, when they look at some bad person, they don't necessarily just see, oh look, bad person. But they look at that person and their inclination is to try to find something worthy of appreciation. And in the case of Putana, Krishna was able to do that. What did he find which was worthy of appreciation? Actually, it's just a very small thing. Was that when Putana came to kill Krishna, she disguised herself. She was like a very grotesque witch type of person, you know, in the old British European culture. You get these pictures of witches, hubble, bubble, toil and trouble. It's a mantra from European witches. And they're usually stirring up some pot of some potion to kill someone with all sorts of horrible things in it. So she was like that. But she assumed the appearance of a beautiful young woman to approach Krishna. And then her idea was to kill Krishna, and her method was going to be, she had put poison on her breast. And so she went to offer Krishna her breast, as if to breastfeed him. But there was poison there, so really she just wanted to kill him. It's not that she really wanted to breastfeed him as such. So, but... when she approached Krishna, and initially she saw, there he is, little Krishna, baby, lying in a cradle. Then, momentarily, a little motherly feeling arose. Means like for a second or 2 seconds, just really, momentarily. She saw Krishna, and momentarily she felt, oh, what a beautiful little child. And then that was it. And then, okay, I'm going to kill him. So it was truly just a little hint of a positive feeling. Just a little hint for just a second or momentarily. And then it was back to, yeah, I'm going to kill him. And then she tried to kill him. but he killed her. So, Krishna though, he accepted that little motherly feeling, momentarily felt. He accepted that and he overlooked all the other, her history, how she had killed so many children and sucked their blood. He overlooked how she was trying to kill him. He overlooked all these things totally. Totally. And he accepted just that one little thing, this momentary motherly feeling that she had for maybe 1 second, or maybe maximum 2. So Srila Prabhupada discusses it, this point there, that this is the character of a gentleman or gentle lady, a person of real quality, of real character, of real culture. They can do that. Not like, you know, somebody does something against you and immediately you feel, right, I'm going to get him. Oh, I'm going to get him. And then you start daydreaming. I'll get him in this way. Then I'll get him in that way. And, you know, this type of mood comes upon many people. If someone blatantly offends them, something like that. But not with a person, not with Krishna, and not even just with any person who has real character and quality of personality, culture. And so, it is nice to try to cultivate this. On the other hand, the actual polar opposite in Bhagavad Gita chapter 9 verse 1, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that because you are never envious of me, because you are not envious of me, I shall impart to you now the highest knowledge. This is chapter 9 verse 1. So now, Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushan's purport to this verse, chapter 9, verse 1, he makes a very interesting point. He gives a definition of envy, the polar opposite of being able to appreciate even Putana. What to speak of some normal person. So, Baladeva Vijayabhushan gives a definition of envy. He says, envy means that you look at a person, and not just at how they look, but including how they look, but you look at their mind, the type of person. And he says, envy means you search to find fault, even in the midst of many good qualities, but you search to find fault. And then if you find some fault, which is not hard to do, then you think, aha, now I understand, got it. Write him off. He's gone now, out of the picture. Even in the midst of many good qualities, this is envy. So we don't want to be like that. We don't want to be like that. I mean, that's really sick. It's too sick. So we should try to be the sort of person who can appreciate the good qualities of other people, but at the same time, without being just like sort of innocently foolish, but still we should try to appreciate the good qualities which are actually there. Srila Prabhupada would say, A devotee is like a honeybee, whereas a non-devotee is like a fly. Honeybees are attracted to sweet things and not to dirty things. But flies, oh, they're attracted to dirty and rotten things. It's amazing, actually. You know, interesting point. If you put a plate of nice, fresh fruit, prasadam, you put a plate down, and then there's some flies, you know, there are flies everywhere. The flies will not come and land on it. But when it starts to sort of decompose a little, then the flies come and the ants come and they all come. But when it's fresh, they won't come. Because they have that nature. They're attracted to things which are decomposing, deteriorating, and like that. So we should try to be like honeybees. And particularly amongst the devotees, try and appreciate the good qualities of the devotees. You know, it happens sometimes that even amongst the devotees, there may be one devotee who you don't get on with. It happens. Just you may have different personalities, different natures. The other devotee may be very loud, and you might be very quiet. And so this, it may be a little bit of a problem. But still, we should try to appreciate the good qualities of the devotees. And we should be very careful not to get into the mood, there's some devotee, and you know, we don't get on 100%. And then when we see them, we think, oh no, it's him again. Ah, it's her again. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if, when you see a devotee, if you are not in a natural way happy, here's a devotee. But if you just, you know, spontaneously, you just think, oh boy. He says, you are already a resident of hell. Hare Krishna. So even if, yeah, I was thinking last night, this morning actually, I was thinking, from the chariot yesterday and so many Rathi Yatras, somehow I just, even when I try to not get on the chariot, I tell them, no, I don't want to get on the chariot, I just want to walk. I end up on the chariot. I don't know how it happens. It's magic. And then I start throwing things and inevitably hit someone on the head. Did I hit you? Yeah. Or I hit her? Well, you're a devotee. Others would think, you know, what's this guy doing? Or I squirt people with water. I get you. So we should try and be like that. Try and be appreciative. And not get, at least not get too upset. Particularly, you know what we should not get too upset about? Minor sort of eccentricities, minor little habits, and minor little things of a person. Try not to become too affected by them. Try and develop this ability to overlook certain things and appreciate the good. This will help us. Help us in our Krishna consciousness. Although at the same time, like I said, not be just like innocently foolish. If you see a devotee somehow or other you're walking down the street and you see a devotee smoking a cigarette. Then you have to note that. Well, this is not good. You know, we need to help this devotee, actually. You shouldn't think that, oh, that's okay. No problem. It is a problem. Although, one little thing I can tell you. This is an interesting little story. Just before I begin trying to answer the questions, Srila Prabhupada once, he was having his morning massage, and his practice was, while he was being massaged, particularly in the morning, his secretary would read the mail, different letters which had come in from different devotees around the world. So the devotee, the secretary, would read the mail, and Prabhupada would listen and sometimes dictate a response and sometimes just think about it. So one devotee wrote to Prabhupada, and there was another devotee just happened to be there who witnessed this and told us about it. That one devotee wrote to Prabhupada, there's Prabhupada relaxing, being massaged. Secretary's reading the letter. Devotee in the letter says that, Srila Prabhupada, I have a problem with smoking. He said, you know, I give up, I stop smoking, and you know, I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, and then it goes on for a few weeks, then maybe after a month, I don't know what happens. I just can't handle it. So after maybe a month or so, I smoke a cigarette. And then I smoke for a little while. And then I feel, no, I can't do this. So somehow I stop again. And then it's okay again for some weeks or whatever. And then after a little while, I just feel, and then I smoke again. And then I smoke for a little while. And then again, I think, no, can't do this, have to stop this. And so I stop. So this is my problem. The devotee was explaining in the letter to Srila Prabhupada. So the devotee who told us, who witnessed this, said he was sitting there listening to this and thinking, what a nonsense. What sort of devotee is this? You call yourself a devotee? You're smoking? Come on. Just, you know, get out of here. So then the devotee, the secretary, finished reading the letter, and Prabhupada, relaxing there, Prabhupada said, what a great soul. He's struggling so hard for Krishna. He's trying so hard, even though it's so difficult. But he's trying so hard to please Krishna. And that devotee who was listening, it was like, wow, talk about a shift of paradigm, a paradigm shift. Well, a different perspective altogether on the situation. Yeah. Anyway, of course it depends, and we shouldn't be innocently foolish, but we should try and see the good qualities of devotees and appreciate them and not develop like real attitudes towards other devotees, negative attitudes. If they have some real fault, like if they're smoking cigarettes, which, you know, it happens to some, then rather than think, this bad devotee, you know, we don't like this, not serious, but rather think, how can we help? Can we help? Can we do something to help this devotee come to grips with this problem? Okay, those are some thoughts on the subject. Let us try to answer a question or two here. What exactly is a spiritual body? Yes, what is a spiritual body? Well, within this material body is a spirit soul. Krishna explains this in detail in Bhagavad Gita. We are all eternal spirit souls. These bodies are like vehicles for us. We are the real person, like the driver in a car. Something like that. So, that soul, that spirit soul, which is the source of all the consciousness, all the vitality, the life which is animating the body and like that, that is us. The spirit soul is the spiritual body in a seed form. And when a devotee becomes purified, the soul develops, manifests again as a spiritual body. So now, we are the soul. But now the soul has unfolded into its natural condition as a spiritual body. What does that mean? It means we are the spiritual body. This body we are not. It's like a vehicle. But that body, which is the expanded manifestation of the soul, we are the soul. We are the spiritual body. Yes. So that spiritual body is Sat Chit Ananda, eternal, fully conscious, and fully blissful. And that is who we are. Eternal, fully conscious, and fully blissful as devotees of Krishna, as servants of Krishna. Yes. So this is what the spiritual body is. It is actually made of the elements, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. These are actual energies, like sort of experienceable, touchable commodities, you could say. Yeah. Whereas these bodies are temporary, full of ignorance and misery, and also made of flesh, blood, and bones, etc. The spiritual body is eternal, fully conscious, and fully blissful, and it is actually composed of these spiritual energies. So yes, through devotional service, our eternal spiritual body will re-manifest, and then we'll go back to Godhead, and we will be there with Krishna in our spiritual bodies, in our eternal relationships with Him. Why so much obstinacy on the part of the living entity, despite hearing so much spiritual subject matters? Well, the problem is, they have like a fundamental attitude problem. It's just entrenched in their system that we don't like this. We want material things. We don't want spiritual things. And no matter how much sense it makes, it doesn't matter, because we have this fundamental orientation that we don't want it. We're practically fixed like that. It's deeply ingrained. As they say, old habits die hard. And we mentioned smoking habits. And I'm sure probably all of you know at least one person who has a real smoking problem. So, and to get them out of it, wow, well, in some cases it's not possible. They're not able. and they also don't want to sufficiently. But imagine if you have some habit which you're deeply attached to for millions of years, and now you've got to break that habit. You don't just wake up tomorrow morning and, oh, okay, no more. No. It's a gradual process. So, the living entities in this material world, they have this entrenched, deeply ingrained dislike for Krishna, for God, and entrenched determination to enjoy for themselves. I'm number one. What do they say? Anyway, all the best for number one. So, and it's been millions of years. And this is why it can be difficult, even though there may be very good reasons, very logical. For example, I'll give you an example. I was at a school, high school in Chatsworth, a few years ago. We did a presentation to some of the matric students there. And there was this one young fellow, you know, 17, 18 years old, and he was sort of quasi-scientifically minded, and he was very attached to the Big Bang Theory, which, you know, a simple explanation of which is, in the beginning there was nothing, then there was a Big Bang, and everything came out of it, and here we are today. Thank you, Big Bang. This is, in essence, in a nutshell, what it's about. So he was very attached, extremely attached to that idea. I was trying to make some arguments, and he just couldn't accept it. So I said to him, now what is science? What is the process of science? The process of science is, you have a theory, then you do an experiment to test the theory, and then you get some result, and that's it. That's the result is the result. And then it can be accepted as scientific fact. It may not be exactly according to the theory. If it's not, well then, you know, we're not so attached to the theory, but we're attached to the result. So he agreed, yes, that's the scientific process, which it is. So I said, in regard to this idea of the Big Bang, now of course, you know, we cannot really do an experiment like on a universal scale. But in history, there have been many Big Bangs. Means like on our level, like in wars, bombs, even atomic bombs, Big Bangs on our level. So, in fact, there have been thousands and probably millions of Big Bangs which have blown up buildings and blown up cities, etc. There have been many, many Big Bangs. And I said to him, out of all those perhaps millions of Big Bangs, these bombs which went off, has there been one instance, one, out of all of them, where you just leave it, you know, the bomb goes off, and now you just leave the scene, and you come back some years later, and it's just all come together again? You know, you blow up a building, and you don't go and reconstruct it, you leave it. You just leave it. And you come back a few years later, and there's the building again. Or even a better building. Has that ever happened one time? Just one time? He said, no. And I said, but there have been so many Big Bangs explosions, and then people have come along afterwards and reconstructed the buildings and the cities, etc., etc. And then you get something nice, but it's because intelligent people came along and worked on it. And he was forced to agree, yes, that's true. So I said, if we apply this principle to this idea of the Big Bang, wouldn't it seem to make more sense that some intelligent person came along in the past and put together this creation, which we see, and, you know, rather than just there was some huge bang, but planets and cities and species of life, etc., etc., came simply out of the Big Bang? Wouldn't it make more sense, the idea that some intelligent person put things together? And he went like, no. And I said, you know, you have an attitude problem. That's actually, the problem is, you have an attitude problem. It's not a question of intellect. It's not a question of intelligence, reasonable explanation, etc. You just don't want to accept it. So this is the situation in general. Yeah. Like, I was having, I must say, it ended up being an argument with a born-again Christian. Let me warn you, if you don't know already, don't deal with born-again Christians. I mean, particularly the more enthusiastic ones. So I was having what ended up being an argument with this one. And whatever I'd say, he'd just say, no. I'd say, you know, something I think fairly reasonable. He'd say, no. And something else fairly reasonable. No. 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 Then I said, and Jesus is the only way. He said, no. Because he was just on the track. It wasn't a question of, you know, is it right or wrong? He was just fixed in an attitude. So why so much obstinacy? It goes deep. It goes very deep. And the root is, I want to enjoy. How am I going to get my enjoyment? And if I have to give up my enjoyment and try to give enjoyment to another person, oh, that's diametrically opposed to my whole position in life. So this is the problem. This is the problem. Last one. Who's next? Oh, okay. So last one. Let's see. What do we do when we rely on someone senior to lead the way properly in a business environment, but he would do nothing to improve the situation? Fortunately, I'm not a businessman. I don't think I'd be a good one. I retired at the age of 21, so perhaps that says enough. But what would you do if you've got some senior person to lead you in your work, but he doesn't do anything to improve the situation? Get another job. How's that? Can you reach to the highest while you chant and not do any rituals? Basically, yes. Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nasjeva, 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 Gatiran. In this age of Kali, we should simply chant the holy names, chant the holy names, chant the holy names. Because in this Kali Yuga, there's no other way, no other way, no other way to achieve the goal of pure love for Krishna. And even, you know, when we do arati, when we do arati, we offer the agarbatti, we offer the lamp, we offer the water in the conch, we offer the handkerchief, flowers, chamara, peacock fan. It may look like a ritual. It may look like a ritual. It's not a ritual. In Krishna consciousness, there's nothing which is simply a ritual, like a formula. You just do it because it's just like the official way of doing it. Of course, we systematically offer arati, for example, in set ways. We systematically offer food in set ways, things like this. But these are not just rituals, like we said, like formulas, just the way we just do things. When we offer arati, we are actually offering these things to the Lord. Some nice incense, agarbatti, fragrant, a nice lamp so he can warm his hands, some water so he can wash his hands, a handkerchief so he can dry his hands, the flowers, of course, because hopefully they're nice and fragrant. The chamara to keep flies away, and the peacock fan to cool. So we are actually serving the Lord in these ways. Or we offer food to the Lord, and because he eats, we are inviting him, please eat. And he eats. Yeah. So these are not just rituals. You know the famous story, I'm sure you've heard the story. I think it's from Unit 3, Chatsworth, so it's really an official Chatsworth story. There was the priest, he made a living doing different rituals and prayers and pujas and whatnot. And then one day he decided, okay, I will take my oldest son with me and train him up so he learns how to do the programs nicely. So there they are doing some havan for some purpose or other. And a cat came and started rubbing against the father, the priest, as he's doing the yajna, the havan. So he got up, picked up the cat, took it away, came back, continued with the havan. Shortly after, he passed away, and the oldest son had to take over the program. So you know what he did? Whenever he would go to do a havan, he would take a cat. Because at a certain point, you have to pick up the cat and take it away. There's a Chatsworth story. Unit 3. From the flats. Like they say in Chatsworth, what they say? Gonna hit him on the head with a hoil. So, I'm from Unit 5, thanks. Central Chatsworth. So there's nothing in Krishna consciousness which is really just a ritual, just a formula, just the official way. Even though there are systems for doing certain things, But it's not like that. They're all actually personal exchanges with the Lord. I think I have to excuse myself. I have to make a conference call, I think. And marriage is sort of coming. Okay. Do I have to go now? Oh, 4:30. Okay. Let me just struggle on. I don't want to bore you to tears. Are you bored?
No.
Oh, okay. So let me just carry on for the time being. I'm sure Indra Deva Maharaj will come. And when he comes, he will sort out any confusion I have created. Here's a strange, well, I shouldn't say that. Just an unusual question, and I'm not sure if I understand it. Is it all right to eggs only for devotees? Well, actually, I can't understand it. Is the person who wrote the question here, is it all right to eggs? Maybe it means to eat eggs. Okay, I won't bother with that one. But, you know, a short answer would be no. And I think that's about all you need to know. Okay, now here's an interesting question. When I consider the different names of Radha Krishna, for instance, Sitaram, Lakshmi, Nrisinga, Lakshmi Narayan, etc., it seems that there's always a feminine and masculine side of God. So, the question then, can God, Krishna, be considered as either masculine or feminine? Well, not in the ways that we consider ourselves and others masculine, feminine, like that. You know what I saw? I had to, I think, register for Gmail. Not only do I use Facebook, I also use email. Isn't that terrible? So I had to fill out this form. And it had, you know, date of birth, okay. I can remember that still. And whatever else. And names and so on and so forth. So then I came to this one, gender. And it's, you have to click on a little arrow at the end of the box, and then the choices come up. And you click on the right choice. And it said, male, female, other. I'm serious. I'm serious. Anyway, we won't get into politics. So, but yeah. In the sense that we are masculine, feminine, like that, Krishna, God, cannot be considered masculine, feminine. Doesn't work like that. Doesn't work like that at all. Krishna, we refer to Krishna as He, not it. And not as some people suggest, he / she. We refer to him as he, but it's more just sort of a convention of language rather than an expression of what is Krishna. So, but, well, Krishna is God. Krishna is the absolute truth. And actually, in one sense, Krishna is everything. And Krishna expands into Radharani. Who is Radharani? Radharani is the pleasure potency of Krishna. It means basically Krishna's capacity to enjoy his pleasure potency means part of him, part of his being, part of him, the person, Radharani. But in order to increase the pleasure, he places his capacity to enjoy pleasure outside of himself. And in that way, there is more pleasure than if Radharani, his pleasure potency, just simply remained within him. Yeah. Because his potency, his energy, is a person. It's not just like an energy, like this light. Light is an energy. It's a thing. Light is not a person. It's a thing. It's an energy. So, but Krishna's pleasure potency, his capacity to enjoy, is not a thing. It is a person. It is a person. And that is Srimati Radharani. So one time, Srila Prabhupada asked a whole room full of devotees, like here. Prabhupada asked the devotees, "Who is God?" Now you might think, asking devotees, it would be another thing to just ask some people somewhere. But ask a whole room full of devotees, "Who is God?" And the devotees looked at each other like, "What?" And someone put his hand up and said, "Krishna!" And what do you think Prabhupada said? "No, Krishna is not God." And then the devotees were like, shock. Is there someone higher that we have not been informed of yet? And Prabhupada said, "Radha Krishna is God. Radha Krishna is God." Because even though when Krishna places his pleasure potency external to himself, it doesn't mean that he is now bereft of any capacity for pleasure. No. He remains complete. Krishna, Prabhupada would say, in the absolute, 1 + 1 = 1. And 1 - 1 = 1. You can have Krishna, that's 1. You can then have Krishna and Balaram. And you think, 2. But no, ultimately, it's still 1. Because they're the same person. Yes. So, Krishna remains complete even when he sort of extracts his capacity to enjoy and places it external to himself. But he still remains complete. Yeah. But on the other hand, because Krishna's expansion into the form of Radharani is so significant in terms of the, you could say, the functioning of God, the manifesting of God, the pastimes of God, it is so significant that therefore Prabhupada said, and it was sort of tongue-in-cheek to some degree, but he said, yeah, Krishna's not God, Radha Krishna is God. So therefore, Krishna, but masculine and feminine, as we know masculine and feminine, this is all, it's essentially just the reproductive process for the ongoing, you know, procedures of the different species. That's all it is. in the spiritual world, there are men and women who are devotees and husbands and wives, but they have no attraction for each other as people have here. You know what they say? Love makes the world go round. How sweet. Actually, lust makes the world go round. You look good to me. I look good to you. Let's get together. But in the spiritual world, what to speak of? Between Krishna and Radharani, there being literally, actually no material attraction as we know it. Even between all the other devotees. There's so many. Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, they're there in the kingdom of God. But their relationship is not like that, not like here, male-female relationship at all. It's simply a very deep, affectionate relationship of devotees serving Krishna together and cooperating as a team to serve Krishna together and appreciating each other's assistance and the relationship in those terms and not the sexual thing at all. Literally not existent. It's only here in the perverted reflection in the material world that you get these things. So, yeah. So that's an interesting point. Okay. An extension of this question, is there a feminine side of Lord Jagannath? Well, Jagannath's eternal consort is Lakshmi, Lakshmi Devi. Yeah. And in the Jagannath temple in Puri, they have a separate temple for Lakshmi. In many of the old traditions in India, you don't find like Lakshmi Narayan together on the same altar, Radha Krishna together on the same altar. But you find that Narayan, Vishnu, he has a temple and Lakshmi has a temple. Within the compound, but like separate building. Yeah. So anyway, Jagannath, in Jagannath Puri, there's the temple of Lakshmi there, and she is his eternal consort. And in the Rathayatra festival, you know what happens? You know what happens? What happens is that Lakshmi knows that during the Rathayatra, her husband Jagannath likes to go. He really likes to go because down the other end of the street is this place called Gundicha, and there the inhabitants of Vrindavan come, and so Jagannath goes in the Rathayatra and meets them, including the gopis. And Lakshmi thinks this is not so good. So when the time for Rathayatra comes, then Jagannath asks, as a good, faithful, honorable husband, he asks permission from his wife. May I go, please? Is he a good husband? What do you think? May I go, please, dear? On the Rathayatra. But Lakshmi knows what it's all about. So Lakshmi says, no. You stay here. And so Jagannath can't go on the Rathayatra, and Jagannath feels a bit frustrated. So then Jagannath goes and speaks to his brother, Balaram. Dad, come on, look, you're my older brother. You've got to help me here. Go and speak to my wife and just explain that you'll take care of me and see that I don't do anything I shouldn't. And she should let me go. So Balaram says, okay. And Balaram goes and speaks with Lakshmi and says like that, listen, don't worry. I will keep an eye on him. I'll make sure he doesn't do anything I wouldn't do. Because he also dances with Gopis, so Lakshmi is not convinced. And Lakshmi says, all right, look, I'll think about it, but I'm just not ready. I'm just not ready to agree. So Balaram goes and reports back to Jagannath that, you know, we're getting close, but we haven't got there yet. And so Jagannath then approaches Subhadra, their sister, and says, listen, you're a woman. You go and speak to her as a woman, sister-in-law, and just tell her that I'm a woman like you. I understand how you feel. Don't worry. I will make sure he doesn't do anything he shouldn't do. So Subhadra goes and appeals to Lakshmi Devi that, look, I'm a woman. I feel for you. I know how you feel. Just don't worry. But you know what these husbands are like. You can't just frustrate them completely. You got to give them a little rope every now and then. So Lakshmi says, oh, all right then. But she says, listen, he's got to come back the same night. And Lakshmi says, no problem. No problem. I'll make sure. So then they have the Rath Yatra. This is how it happens. And they reenact this in the Jagannath temple every year. But he doesn't come back that night, nor the next night, or the next night, or the next night. On the fifth day, Lakshmi, it's too much for Lakshmi. So she takes her friends and soldiers and she goes to Gundicha and she attacks Jagannath and his devotees and associates, and there's a big battle. It's called Hera Panchami. And Jagannath is forced onto his knees in front of Lakshmi. I'm coming! I'm coming! I'll come back! I'll come back! This evening! Just now coming! So she goes back to the temple, but he doesn't come back. Finally, on I think it's the seventh or the eighth day, he comes back. That's the return Rath Yatra. Anyway, so Lakshmi is the consort of Jagannath. Okay, I have to make a conference call. Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you for listening very patiently. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.